Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruo, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show features my conversation with Chris Sharma, a British student author from our new book, Dear Freedom Writer, and his fabulous Freedom Writer teacher, Sam Norwood. We discuss Chris's struggles with bullying and how important trust is for victims of bullying. We also discuss how parents, teachers, and students alike can protect people from bullying. This episode is a powerful look at how to find strength in the face of adversity, and I hope it will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. Since the Freedom Writers and I first published the Freedom Writers Diary in 1999, we've remained steadfast in our commitment to stand up to bullying. However, bullying remains a huge problem in schools all over the world. According to a 2019 National Center for Educational Statistics survey, one out of every five students in the U.S. reported being bullied at school. And sadly, the effects of bullying can be devastating. Victims of bullying are more likely to experience anxiety, depression, and even suicide ideation. That's why the Freedom Writers and I knew how important it was to have a story about bullying in our new book, Dear Freedom Writer. Today's guest, Chris Sharma, knows the pain and suffering that can come from bullying all too well. In his Dear Freedom Writer letter, Chris shares his personal story of being bullied and the pain he felt standing idly by as a friend became a victim too. Chris's story is one of strength, regret, and finally transformation. And I'm so honored to have this beautifully written story published in our book. However, Chris's love affair with writing started well before Dear Freedom Writer in a unique program called Write Back, started by Freedom Writer teacher extraordinaire Sam Norwood. Sam started Write Back after working with a group of his students in the outskirts of London once he realized that every young person has a story to tell. Inspired by the work of the original Freedom Writers, Sam and his students told their truth and shared their stories with the world, even reaching out to local galleries in London to celebrate their work. Sam's passion and commitment to social justice helps him empower students like Krish, who are struggling with confidence, self-esteem, and the effects of bullying. Without further ado, here is my courageous conversation with Krish and Sam. So first and foremost, Sam, I love that you are the first original Freedom Writer teacher from the UK. And how did you discover the Freedom Writer movement to become the first Freedom Writer teacher from the UK?
When it all started with a young person, I was in my first year of teaching, and she bugged me, really. She said, you know, Sarah, you have to watch this film. You have to watch this film. And I said, yeah, you know, I've got lots of things on my plate. I will try and do it. And I did. I eventually did. I sat down and watched it. And then I watched it again twice in the course of the same evening and was kind of just blown away by the story and by the power of the young people's voices. And so I got the book. I read the book cover to cover. And I thought, I want to know how these young people were able to achieve such an incredible achievement as a group and how this teacher was able to empower those young people. I found my first year as a teacher quite tough, and it was really a kind of a light. And so when I saw that film and when I read the stories, I just knew I had to learn more.
So I'd love for you to tell our audience about the beautiful diversity of your classrooms and where your school's located for those that are not familiar with the UK and where you're located.
We're in Barking and Dagenham, which is in East London. And so I've been a teacher there for 9 years. Our school is kind of situated in what we call a housing estate. I think you might call it a project, and the largest housing estate in Europe. It serves an incredibly diverse community. There's no kind of ethnic majority. There's a huge diversity in the backgrounds and the heritages of the students who make up our student body. And that makes that community so rich. And so once I'd kind of learned some of the approaches of the Freedom Writers and got a grasp of some of the pedagogy, And when we kind of threw open the gauntlet for the young people in my school to tackle writing their own book, it was just so apparent that these young people had so many incredible stories to tell, and that their experience is just not captured in the existing literature. There were stories these young people had to tell that took us across all of the continents of the world, that took us to war zones, that took us to kind of really traumatic family experiences of migration, and incredible positive stories were as local as like the fish and chips shop down the road and as far away as Afghanistan. There was just a huge breadth and range of those stories. And so I think one of the things that makes a project like a Freedom Writer style project work in my school is that those young people have such incredible stories to tell. And if given that opportunity to pick up a pen or to say the words of their story and they take it, everyone is richer for it, because there is such a wealth of experience and knowledge that comes from a diverse group like that.
Krish, the program that you are in is about expression and about voice and about writing. So let's start there. What has it been like to have this really safe space provided for you to write, to tell, and to share?
I mean, write back's amazing. I love it. I think it was in 2020 I started, and it's just been great since then, you know, just having one place to write. At first, we did a project writing a book as a group, and that was really fun because you got to see, you know, other people's stories. And then that quickly progressed into different projects like map projects and writing stories on there and dropping them onto a location in Barkingham Dagenham Borough onto the map. It was a lot of fun just writing different stories, hearing others' opinions, and learning sort of how to write better through other people's feedback and by listening to others' stories itself.
So you were an author in England before you became a published author in the United States. So you're now, yes, you're now twice published. And what has that done for your confidence to be a published author, starting this journey when you were 13 and now you're 15?
Oh, I mean, my confidence in writing especially has just skyrocketed. I mean, I've loved writing since I started secondary school. So this was just more of a way to develop my skills. And yeah, I'm really glad that I chose to be a part of it. So my confidence just writing about anything really has gone sky high.
I think every English teacher around the world is so jealous of your enthusiasm. I think that's what we all dream of, as somebody who might have been tentative prior to being exposed to the writing process and then watching confidence. So when you started secondary school, how old were you?
I was 11.
Okay.
When I started.
Okay. So I think your equivalent of secondary school is what we would call in America either middle school or junior high. The reason I ask is what I love about our podcast is we have audience members in about 100 countries. Yeah. So everything that you share, Krish, is teaching someone else. So let's talk about the similarities first. In Write Back, you learned to tell a great story. So tell us about how liberating that is.
It's just great. I love writing. I put pen to paper over there and we share little bits of what we've got. And, you know, it's very empowering when you hear others' stories and when you hear other people react to your own and give feedback on your own. You think it's a miracle that you've written this piece or that they've written that piece in the first place.
So speaking of a miracle, your amazing teacher, Mr. Norwood, chose you and said, I've got this brilliant student who's got a brilliant story. People can read your story and they don't know for certain where you're located. And I love the universality of that because you are a great storyteller. So I think that's why your story really resonated with us, because we knew that you were from the UK, but the reader doesn't necessarily know where you're located. So let's talk about the subject of bullying and how did you choose, of all the things that you could write about, that you were going to write about bullying?
I was bullied for quite some time during primary school. So my year 5 was quite heavily infiltrated with a lot of bullying. I mean, my character in the first part of the story was sort of the person that was being bullied. And I wanted to portray those emotions that I'd felt then. I wanted it to come across as raw. I wanted people to feel empathy, sympathy, and I wanted them to resonate with those emotions, even if they had not been bullied. So I decided to write the story in such a way that it would be true to myself and true to those who have been bullied before anyone around the world. And I wanted others to sort of know what it felt like.
Sam, as the quintessential writing teacher, what I love that you realized is you needed more time and a safe space for all of your students to continue writing. And so you had this vision to create Write Back. And I would love for our audience to know what that vision of Write Back is and how the mission has evolved to not just be a mission, but now it's like a mandate. So tell us about Write Back.
So Write Back, we believe that every young person has a story to tell and they have the power to tell it. And it really comes from that central insight of the Freedom Writers that if you believe in young people, if you give them the opportunity to tell their story, not only are they going to be better off for it, but their peers are, and all of us are, because we have things to learn from them. So the project started as a project in the school that I teach in, and those young people wrote a book about their experiences and their family's experiences of migration. Then they got the bug, and so they wanted to write another one. And so they wrote another book about the labels that are placed on them as young people and the stereotypes that they had felt that they'd faced through their lives. And then they thought they wanted to do more. And so they created an exhibition in a local gallery about their stories. And then they wanted more. So one of them reached out, without my knowledge, to 300 museums and galleries across London, all shapes and sizes, and emailed them all saying, we want to put our stories in your museum and galleries. And so we organized three more exhibitions. And finally, when they were in their last year of school, they then started running workshops for younger students to help them tell their stories. And so when that cohort were ready to leave, we had a conversation really about what they wanted to happen. They were all going off to universities, to jobs, to do different things for the rest of their life. But what do they want to happen to this project? And so in the end, we set up a charity. And so that's what Write Back is. We are based in the same community as the school that it was born from. We're in a youth centre right in the heart of Barking and Dagenham. And we work now with young people from across many different local schools who all come to us because their teachers feel that these are young people who have got stories and that they should have the capacity to tell them. And Krish, who was part of the Dear Freedom Writer project, he's one of those Write Back storytellers. So it fills me with a huge amount of pride.
I had loved watching it evolve from you were staying with us in Long Beach and you had this great idea. And we were so enthusiastic and said, you know, whatever you need from us, we support you. So I love that it went from a vision to a mission. And now it's really a movement. And you are creating published authors across the UK. And I love that Krish is now a global published author three times over. So he's been involved in the first two publications. So now he's thrice published. And what I enjoy doing during the pandemic is meeting a lot of your writers. And it was such a bright light during a really dark time because your students, you know, had stories to tell and the world to hear. And so of all of those storytellers, how was it that Krish was selected for Dear Freedom Writer?
Yeah, it was obviously a really tough choice to nominate one young person amongst all of the wonderful young people that we work with. In the end, the reason why we went for Krish is because he lives and breathes storytelling. He is so passionate about telling stories and about finding both his own confidence to tell his story, but also to help other people tell theirs. And we knew that he would thrive on a project where he could both tell his own story, but also work with other people and share theirs. And so as an advocate of storytelling, as someone who who loves it, who loves poetry, who loves music and songwriting, who loves kind of autobiographical writing. We thought this would be an incredible opportunity for him to tell that story. And it certainly proved that way.
I love that Chris took a lot of risks. There was like a dream sequence and he wrote in different voices and he spanned different grades and years. But ultimately, his story is about bullying, which I think is so relatable to young kids in elementary school, middle school, and high school. So talk about why that was so important for young kids in your community to have a voice about bullying, because his story was such a beautifully written story about the different ways in which kids are bullied.
Yeah, I think it's a real tribute to him, really, that he is able to reflect on his experiences in the way that he does in that story. And I think it might have been easier for him in some ways to write a very straightforward account of being at one end of the equation of bullying. But I think what's really beautiful about Chris's story is that he actually considers the way in which he is involved in bullying himself. And I think that's just something that is rarely talked about, but is just so common in the experience of young people today. Chris describes the sensation of participating in a kind of WhatsApp conversation and the ways in which your kind of online persona kind of may manifest in a way that's more cruel or bullying than you would in real life. And I think that's a story that I've not really read, certainly not read from the perspective of a young person who's experienced it. And so I think it's really powerful to have that story written in that way. And yeah, it's I think quite often with childhood experiences of bullying, these are things that people often don't talk about, and they sometimes might not talk about them until they're in their adulthood. And I think the fact that, you know, the young people in this project, all of the young people involved in Dear Freedom Writers, were able to reflect on their own experiences in such a mature and thoughtful way just fills me with hope for the future, that these young people who have gone through various different circumstances can think about it, can reflect upon it, and have the optimism to move forward in their lives. I think, yeah, it's just been an inspiring project to see unfold.
Chris, what I love that you did in your storytelling is you dealt with the physical element of being bullied, the emotional element of being bullied, but also this whole new way of cyberbullying, where it may not be in someone's face, but the ramifications might even be worse because so many more people are voyeuristic. So let's talk about some of those different elements of the physical part, the emotional part, and then the online part.
I mean, physical bullying is pretty simple. Hit someone constantly over the course of however long, and you just make them really upset about it, that they're being hit, that they can't do anything about it. You make that person feel weak, which ties into the emotional part of where you might not let someone do something, you're making them an outcast, and that sort of plays on their mind and makes them upset as well. And cyberbullying, I think it's the worst one, in my opinion, because you never know who's going to feel what about something. You can't erase what you've done. There's evidence, there's proof. And then the bully, they are behind a screen, they're behind a mask. The phone or whatever they're using is kind of like a mask. They could say whatever they wanted and no one would know whether they're joking or not. Someone could take it to heart. Hence the bullied, they might feel really upset by what someone said to them. And it's like really, really disappointing to see so many others get cyberbullied as well.
I love that you've experienced both. And so when you were younger and you were being bullied, did you feel powerless to make it stop? Like, did you ever go home and share with your parents or walk into a classroom and share with a teacher? Like, this just happened to me. What do I do? Or can you help?
In my experience, I left it too late. I kept it in. I didn't say anything to anyone. I thought, you know what, this will all blow over soon. This will be done. This will be over with. I'm about to leave school in 1 year's time. That's it. I don't need to tell anyone. It's not going to make that much of a difference anyway. And with that mentality, I mean, one day, right at the end of the year, I just burst into tears walking home. And my mum was there. She asked me, what's wrong? And I just told her the whole thing, what had happened throughout the years prior, what people had been saying, doing, making me feel. And then it got difficult to tell teachers, because once something's happened for so long and you silence yourself, it's not enough for those teachers to say, oh, this has been happening for this long and I'm only just telling you about it now. It sort of sounds made up. So I think I went wrong in the fact that I didn't speak out when I should have, and I left it too late.
And this breaks my heart when I think of someone at the age of 7, 8, 9, or 10, the powerlessness that some young people go through of suppressing those tears, having a stiff upper lip. You don't complain and you just accept. And it's hard for me to accept that other young people said and did horrible things to you for what sounds like a very long time. So looking back, now that you're older and wiser at the age of 15, what would a 15-year-old Krish say to that 9-year-old Krish?
First of all, speak to your parents, really, because that's who I'd trust more than anyone in the world. Yeah, and then it can then be escalated further to go to the teachers. And really just stop thinking you're weak. This goes to like so many other people who might feel like they're being bullied. Just honestly, don't worry about being called a snitch, a snake, anything like that. It's important that you put yourself first. I thought I was protecting myself, protecting other people. And now I feel like, you know what, I should have done things differently. And if anyone else is doing that currently, just suppressing tears, suppressing emotion, suppressing their feelings about what's going on with them, they should speak out as soon as they can.
Did someone ever say, if you tell your teacher or you tell your parents, we're going to hurt you more?
I mean, it's quite common, isn't it? So that might have been one of the reasons that I didn't say to my parents, because I thought, you know, these threats were real. These threats were actually dangerous. I mean, just tell them, give it your best shot. I'm going to tell anyway. So you can't really do much about that. You can't do anything to me currently because I've got teachers here. Can't do anything to me. I think just don't be afraid is the little catchphrase I'd bestow upon everyone who's being bullied currently.
Sam, when I see Krish now on our Zooms, the words that come to mind are confident and courageous. And I'm sure that's not how he started with you, because his story ultimately was about bullying and that lack of self-esteem. So tell the listener what it was like to watch somebody who did not have a strong sense of self when they started with you, who are now courageous and confident and have really found a voice.
It's, I think, the greatest gift as a teacher, as an educator, is to see the people you work with thrive. And that's just been such a privilege with Krish. He, right from early on, I could see that there was this gem of storytelling, but hidden below some questions, some uncertainties, some major doubts. And so it's just wonderful to see him believe in himself and believe in his stories and to have the pride in telling them. And to be, you know, a UK representative in this book is such an incredible achievement. And we had a kind of celebration among him and his peers when in the UK when he was published. And it was just wonderful to see not only Krish's pride in his achievements, but all of the young people's pride in Krish's achievements too. Like, he did something incredible and the community around him soaked that up. He took one for the team and he represented us. He told his story. And it's just been such a pleasure to see him grow and develop in that way.
And now that he is an author three times over, I must add. What I have loved about this evolution is Krish is an ally and an advocate for getting help sooner. I love even on this very podcast, Krish is like, run, tell, do. He uses all of these action verbs because he didn't run and tell and do prior to Right Back. So we live in the world of words, and when people use action verbs like Krish did, how does that make you feel that he's gone from keeping a lot of that stuff internalized and now he's externalizing ways in which we can get help, ways in which we can find our people, and ways in which we can rise to the occasion?
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about, really. Like, he has the answers. The young people have the answers. I mean, they're not taking their prisoners. They know what we need to do, and they say it with confidence and with pride. And I just feel that it's amazing to see young people advocate for other young people, and their compassion and the wisdom that's shown in those moments are just, yeah, so, so precious. And one of the things that we've been inspired to do at Right Back, kind of from this project and seeing the kind of the ways in which it's impacted the young people involved, is to really help them take on leadership roles within our groups of young people, and to really help the next generation of writers. So when we start our programs this autumn, our graduates is what we call them, people like Krish who have completed a storytelling program, they're going to help inspire the next generation of young writers. And given Krish's enthusiasm, given Krish's wisdom, his advocacy, I have no doubt that they're going to do great jobs, and that the next cohort of young people are going to tell the most incredible stories.
I remember the first visit I had to your school. Your country doesn't have the mass shootings at schools that we have here in America. It's an epidemic now. It's so commonplace and so often that people are actually numb and anesthetized. But on my visit, there had been a stabbing on a bridge in London proper. And there was a lot of vilifying the community in which you teach, because maybe the people that were wielding the knives had come from your community. And you and I, you know, had a really philosophical discussion about racism and how when something bad happens, everybody will turn on the minority population. And I'm just curious for you what that's like to be a teacher trying to protect these kids. You know these kids, you know their parents, you love this community. And whenever the community has been vilified, how you scream to the rafters, these are stereotypes, these are stigmas. Please know the real people.
Yeah, that's exactly what we try and do. And as was proven to the Freedom Writers, the method that is most effective with that, I think, is creating the space for the voices of the people who are affected by it. We try and avoid creating narratives ourselves for the young people that we work with or for the communities. It's their communities, it's their lives, it's their stories. And so what we see as part of our mission at Right Back, and I feel as part of my job as a teacher, is not to create those narratives or not to create a vision of what that community is or what those people are, but to empower the young people to tell that story themselves. They are the ones who live this reality. They are the ones who can experience and who have to experience it on a day-to-day reality. And I just feel like all of our public discourse would just be so impacted if it actually consisted of people who had any lived experiences of the communities that are discussed. And it's just astounding to me how narrow the kind of the pool of expertise, in inverted commas, that is brought in to discuss problems like knife crime, when you have people who live in the communities that have things to say about the ways in which they're police treated, viewed. And so, yeah, I think the empowering of people's voices who live those experiences is one of the crucial weapons in that fight.
Chris, you were physically bullied and you were also emotionally bullied. What do you think was the hardest for you? Was it the blow of a fist or the blow of a word?
Words, definitely. And I think that's what's helped me become a better writer as well, because words definitely hurt more. And I used those words and channeled them into like writing and my own stories. The bully used to be my best friend once upon a time. So it was kind of a shock, you know, but I'm still a little clueless about why. You know, I sort of ask myself sometimes, you know, oh, why did this happen? Why did that happen? I still have no idea.
Is that harder when it's a former friend who rallies other people against you?
Definitely. When you've had that trust in a person, even though you're young, you trust people. Yeah. And that's what makes it harder, because that naivety that you have of trusting a person completely. And then when they turn on you, you're like really upset. It was a few people that bullied me. It wasn't an army, luckily.
Do you think that's harder with, you know, if someone writes a note, that's proof. If somebody were to accost you and pummel you physically, you could have blood or a scar or a bruise. The words, if no one else is around to hear it, is a little harder to prove. So was that even more difficult because you didn't have the tangible proof that someone just said this to me?
It was a bit more difficult because then you have like teachers not believing you, like, oh, he's a good student anyway. He wouldn't say that. So it's sort of like, you see how in, even in films, you've got like these high school bullies or something like that. They're all nice in class, but then, you know, they've built that reputation for the teacher. And then straight after they're like, you're this, you're that. And they just go ahead and show their true nature to those who they think can't handle it, you know?
Chris, what do teachers and parents need to do that could have allowed you to come to us earlier?
It's difficult, but like just knowing the signs of whether someone's being bullied, it can be difficult because a person such as I could suppress emotion. But like there's so many signs, like, you know, just not talking. And I think looking out for those sorts of signs would be a great help to those people. Also, having trust. I think a lot of teachers don't have trust in students who might be getting bullied. If they were troublemakers in the start, you know, it would be less likely that they would be trusted in, okay, I've been bullied, could you help me out? They would just say, no, no, you haven't. You know, I think that could be a major problem as well, is trust.
In your story, you wrote about dreams. So I'm sure you dreamt a lot about being cornered, being attacked, being hurt. Have those dreams stopped?
I mean, when I was being bullied, I had a couple dreams. And it wasn't way too many to the fact that I was being traumatized in my own sleep. But yeah, dreams have completely stopped now, those ones. The nightmares, all of that's gone. They stopped quite early on, I think, because new change of scene, new school, and just a fresh new beginning. That was pretty nice. I remember when I left primary school, I was over the moon. I was like, yes, we're going to start fresh. We're going to do some new stuff. We're going to learn some new things. We're going to make new friends, hopefully friends that don't betray you in the end. And yeah, it was nice to have that.
So something happened from the young boy who was bullied, evolved for a moment into a boy who bullied.
I think it's my perspective of like what bullying is that made myself class this as bullying. But yeah, all I did was just ignore what was going on. And I thought that that in itself was a form of bullying, because that person who was being bullied was a former friend of mine.
So you weren't instigating the bullying. You just didn't stop the bullying.
I didn't stop it and I felt bad about it. I was like, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, is this even my place to do anything?
Let's talk about that. For a lot of young kids, we watch it happen in real time. Kids may be in a cafeteria and like you, they watch it or maybe they laugh and it kind of instigates. So why do you think kids get swept up in that?
I have no clue. It might be something to do with like, oh, I want to be more popular. The popular kids are doing this. So I'm also going to join in maybe become a part of their little group or clique or whatever they have, maybe make some new friends. They would think that those people are their friends. But yeah, that could be one. Or I think it just could be that they're bored. They've got nothing else to do. So why not just sit there and laugh at something that's entertaining for them?
So when it comes to cyberbullying, let's talk about how hard that is, because in a hallway, there's only a few people who could be in a hallway to witness something happening in real time. Online, exponentially, a lot more people could be included. So let's talk about your feelings about online bullying.
I think online bullying is the worst form of bullying, because you can have, as you said, so many more people, exponentially more people than you can in, say, a playground, a bathroom stall, something like that. You can have hundreds of people in, say, a Discord server or any sort of chat group. You can have so many people there who can just sit there, watch, send emojis. I mean, emojis can be horrible. You can send so much without saying words. It's horrible, definitely. And I mean, I can say it's horrible because I've seen it firsthand.
Give me some other examples of the way it stings and hurts online in the same way that it stings and hurts when you hear the laughter in person. For folks who've never been bullied online, what are some of those things that we should be looking for?
I mean, think about if you're going really fast on a bike and you're in the, I don't know, a forest maybe, and there's a couple people around, maybe they're your friends, and you carelessly just, I don't know, bump into a tree, or you just knock the bike into a tree, and those friends, they're laughing at you while you're seriously hurt. I mean, that in and of itself hurts you more, because those friends aren't going to help you. They're just pointing, laughing. They're thinking, oh my God, this guy's an idiot. So yeah.
What made you realize that your emojis or your instigating was making you into a person that you didn't want to be?
What made me realize? I mean, I think it was just how that person was feeling and how I felt when I was being bullied in my own time. Yeah. And it was also the sting of like when they weren't my friend anymore because I didn't do anything to help. So, you know, that sort of gave me that realization that, oh, wow, I've really done something wrong here. Or in not doing something, I've done something even more wrong.
Sam, my last question for you is, if listeners, not if, but when listeners are dying to get their hands on some of these amazing projects that Right Back has created, how can they get a hold of them? How do they contact you?
We have a website, which we have a kind of online archive of stories, and that's at www.right-back.org. And there's a kind of treasure trove of stories, past and present, from young people there, which I'd really recommend people dive into. We're also working on some exciting announcements of ways of releasing these books in a more concrete form. But I'm going to keep that slightly under wraps for now. But if they find the website, then they'll find out about that as well. And I'll also put our social media handles in the show notes as well, so people can follow us there. But please do reach out. We love to hear from people who have been touched by the young people's stories. And the young people love to know that their stories are being read from people from all around the world. So if you're interested in stories, you want to hear some amazing stories from young people, then please do follow us.
Krish, my last question for you is, at the ripe age of 15, now that you are older and you are wiser, what would your advice for bullying be for children?
My advice for children would be just go to the people you trust and actually trust them. Actually know that you can trust them. And just say whatever you need to say about whatever's been going on. And if anyone has been an instigator, they need to think about what they're doing also and how that's affecting whoever's being bullied.
And what would you tell adults that they need to do?
Listen, acknowledge those two, definitely. Because without listening to someone's problem, you'll never know what it is without acknowledging that problem. That problem's never going to be fixed. And with that idea, you can take it, escalate it further to wherever it needs to be escalated to. And, you know, it's the adult's job, especially in like teaching, to help the children and to make sure that they have a great experience in school, in education. This is mainly for teachers. So yeah, if they listen, acknowledge, they'll hopefully also be stopping bullying. Yeah.
What advice would Krish at 15 give to that younger Krish, the very first instance of being bullied?
Run. Go to a teacher. Forget about what's behind you. Go straight to a teacher. Say something. You know, actually say something. Not, oh, I forgot. Just go. Say it. Say that you're being bullied. Say that, you know, these people are hurting you. And also, don't think you're that weak. Don't think that, you know, these people are stronger than you just because they're the ones that are bullying. And don't think that you're weak because you think you can't do anything about it. And then as soon as you're out of school, tell your parents. Tell them straight, you know, whatever's going on.
I'm so grateful to Sam and Krish for sharing the power of writing and their truth about bullying with us. My dear listeners, may we learn to see the humanity in everyone. May we strive to lift others up, not tear them down. And in honor of today's guest, Sam and Krish, may we all stand together against bullying in all its forms. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you for being part of our Freedom Writer family. If you'd like to learn more about our new book, Dear Freedom Writer, Stories of Hardship and Hope from the Next Generation, or learn about Sam's Write Back program, please go to the episode description in your podcast app and click on the links in our show notes. Once again, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell. This episode was produced and edited by Matt Martin Hall and Rob Falk. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.